Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My name is Jason Shepherd, and my guest today, so happy to have BYU basketball legend, Mike Smith. You get a smile when I say basketball legend. Are you comfortable with that?
I'm a legend in my own mind, and I guess in your mind. I'm not uncomfortable with it, but I don't know how accurate it is. I had a blast playing for BYU, and I always considered it a privilege to be able to go play for the university I wanted to. I could have played for other schools, but that was number one on my list ever since Danny Ainge's historic drive against Notre Dame, which I was listening to in Southern California on a radio because we could get the KSL signal, and I heard Paul James make that historic call. And that radio was kind of in the kitchen with my two little brothers and my mom. I remember going crazy. I don't know why that wasn't on TV or we weren't watching that Sweet 16, or I guess it was a Sweet 16 game, right? Propelled them into the Elite Eight.
To the Elite Eight, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of my moment when I wanted to go to BYU and play for them. So it was a fun time.
Well, we will certainly get into all of that, but I want to ask you about right now, and for those that aren't local or that aren't aware, you're part of the Utah Jazz broadcast team. You handle pre, half, and post on the TV broadcast with another BYU alum in Alima Harrington, who I know very well, actually worked with Alima way back in the day. What do you do in the NBA offseason? Because it's such a, even though you're not playing, and you're a broadcaster, it's still somewhat of a grind during the season. So when you get away from that, what are you doing?
It really is. And speaking of the grind, I don't know that people realize it, but I try, and people will ask me, what's it like preparing for a game? And granted, I've done probably 20 years in Los Angeles with the Clippers. I did 3 years at BYU games, so that's 23. I think I just finished my sixth year of Jazz games, and there's a year where I didn't do Clippers or Jazz, and I just did ESPN National Radio for a whole NBA season. So that kind of equates to the last 30 years of my life having in some way, shape, or form a basketball season. And then if you go the 9 years before that, there's 9 years of playing professionally. So it's almost the last 40 years of my life I've had a season and an off season, which is both good and bad. And it is a little bit of a grind, Jason, because people will say, well, what's it like? And I said, well, it's kind of like preparing for a midterm every other day for 6.5 months. And yet you get to give your answers to that midterm orally and in front of a live audience on camera in front of thousands of people. And so A, you better be sharp. B, you better be prepared. You better be likable, and you better not mess up. Better not say anything wrong either.
Yeah.
And so when the season ends, I know it's true with Alema as well. We both go through this week of, it's just a little bit surreal. Like, you don't know what to do with yourself for a week. And everyone's like, oh yeah, a week off, you know, like, who wouldn't love that? And I'm like, yeah, you've been doing the same thing and on a routine for 6.5 months. And if they make the playoffs, it's usually longer, which the Jazz typically have, except for the last couple of years. So I find myself lost a little bit. I find myself looking around my office, and I'm looking for stats and things to look up and read and start writing down and getting prepared for the next game, but I don't have a next game. So, what do I do with myself? Jason, I have a business. I have a partner in Los Angeles. You can either call it a consulting firm or a marketing firm. And what we do is we look for, mostly MarTech stuff, marketing technology companies that are on the rise. And so not startup companies, but let's call them early stage. They've been funded. They've shown a little bit of growth and traction. And then we will approach them, or they will approach us and ask us to align ourselves with them to help their reach. And so between me and my partner, we know 50 to 100 C-suite executives of the top 100 brands in the country. And so we then will facilitate their meetings with those companies to kind of, let's say, stage up their growth. So that's my day job. That's all inclusive. I guess you could say I eat what I kill. So as hard as I work is what I will earn. But I find it fascinating. I love it. I connect with people all over the country. I connect with rising companies here in Utah. And aside from that, I own pizza franchises, Mountain Mike's Pizzas, or in the state of Utah and Arizona. They're all over now, but 6 years ago, they were only in Northern California. But I went into corporate and got the rights to develop this brand in Utah and Arizona. So we now have 12 stores in the two states and hoping to have 30 in each state in the next 5 years, which is ambitious, but that's what we've been doing. And that's it, you know?
Oh, that's it. It sounds pretty busy.
Father to my 10 children, and there's now 3 grandchildren. So it's, listen, I don't stand here or sit here before you and think I have it all figured out. I don't. I am a humble, hardworking guy who's trying to make the most of every day and better myself and better my situation. And along the way, try and lift people, which is, I think, one constant in my prayers is every day I'm hoping to lift somebody in some way, whether that's little youth basketball I coach. It could be someone I meet on the street, could be a friend, it could be a neighbor, it could be anything. But I try to do that. I'm not great at that.
You just referenced that 10 kids, and correct me if I'm wrong, 5 boys, 5 girls. I don't know how many are still at home, but can you explain what it was, what a typical day was like when you had all 10 in the house?
Well, full disclosure, I'm married for the second time. So I'm married 13 years to my first wife. I had 5 children. A year and a half later, I meet my current wife, Debbie. She's from the East Coast. She's from Delaware, then later New York. Grew up there. She happened to be in California when I met her, some 22 years ago. We've been together ever since. We got married a year after we met, and I adopted her 3 children. So at that time, I had my 5, which were 13, 11, 9, 7, and 5. And I think hers were, oh gosh, I want to say 7, 5, and 4. So there was an immediate influx into our home. And then we tried right away to have maybe a child, but ended up getting pregnant 10 years after the youngest. So let's say 6 years later, because our youngest was 4. And we had twins. Those twins are boy-girl twins, and they still live with us. They're 16 years old. Jackson is a boy. He goes to school here at American Heritage in American Fork. He's a musician and a dancer in musical theater. He composes, he writes, he sings, he dances, and he plays basketball. And then his twin sister, Emmy, is also in those same things, pianist, musician, singer, composer, musical theater, dancer, and she plays golf for Lone Peak High School. So that's the other 8 are out of the house, Jason, and off the payroll, thank goodness. Not all of them are married. 3 are married. The 3 that are married all have 1 child. That was how you get to 3 grandchildren. We have another one getting married. So that'll be number 4. 4 and married, and then 2 at home, 6. So the other 4 are adults and not married, all graduated from college and working and doing wonderful things, but have not found Mr. or Mrs. Wright yet.
Well, that's your family now. Let's talk about your family growing up. What was your family dynamic when you were little?
I'm the 3rd of 5 children from Dennis and Marie Smith. They both come from Pioneer Stock. My mom and dad went to East High School. My dad is really tall, 6'8" in his day, and an engineer, brilliantly smart, could have been anything in life. He's still vibrant as can be. He's 90 years old. My mom also went to East High School, 2 years behind him. Mom is an artist and a violinist and very dexterous. She was a nurse in her day. And she comes from like the Spanish Fork, Salem area. Her stock comes up through there. So there's music in my blood. When I said my mom's a violinist, my dad's mom sang in the choir for 40 years. My dad's dad sold suits to all the general authorities. So they both went to East High School, but I'm born in Rochester, New York, where my dad was working for Eastman Kodak Company, which was his second gig out of high school. I think he went to work in Brigham City for Morton Thiokol as a chemical engineer, then Kodak, where they lived for 10 years, the first 4 years of my life. And then my dad was transferred to Southern California, which I would call home and my upbringing. Hacienda Heights is the name of the town. My dad worked over the hill in Whittier. My dad became a salesman and was just a fantastic father, like was at every one of my sporting events and just worked his schedule around being there. I have an older brother who played basketball at BYU Hawaii. I have a sister who was a music major and a violinist at BYU. They're both tall, 6'7" and 6 foot tall. Then I'm the third kid. I have a younger brother who's now a stake president back in Virginia. He was a high school fantastic athlete. I played four sports in high school. He played three, baseball, football, and basketball. And he's the best position at all those. He's the point guard, the quarterback, and the shortstop, if you can imagine. So he's a freshman when I'm a senior in high school. Although I'm 6'10", he was only 6'1", but just superbly gifted. And then my littlest brother came along 10 years after my youngest brother. So the fifth one was kind of a, you know, late addition to the family. He's a doctor in Idaho, and he played high school basketball. He grew to 6'2.5". He's a left-hander. And that's kind of it. I come from an engineering father and an artist mother, and I kind of feel like I got the best of both worlds. I have, Jason, you'd say, an engineering mind. Like, I'm analytical about the way I would approach my practices and my free throw shooting and the way I would perfect either a golf swing or a shot from 100 yards now as I play golf, or back in the day, how I would perfect how to shoot the ball. But at the same time, I had a little artistry. I had a little freelance from my mom. And I think I saw things on the court different than, say, a rigid engineer might see things. I don't know if that makes sense. I think yeah. I was both. Sometimes I see this little video on YouTube, and it's entitled Tiger, meaning Tiger Woods, the artist, and Tiger, the engineer. And it'll show repetitive videos of him just, you know, hitting a stock 7-iron right in the middle of the green, just like mechanical as could be, robotic, perfect swing. And then it'll show him work a ball around a tree, and they'll call that Tiger the artist, and Tiger the ability to create and innovate. So I don't know. I think I'm a little bit of both. And I don't know. I loved sports growing up. I don't know where I got that, because mom was teaching music lessons and dad was not an athlete. And at some point I'm very involved in sports at a young age, playing baseball and flag football before, tackle football in high school, and obviously basketball from a young age. But reading the sports page as early as age 7, here's a good story to give you an idea who I was. At 10 years old, 1975, the Los Angeles Dodgers at Dodger Stadium hosted the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And I saw a little thing in the newspaper, because that's the way we consumed our news, and it was a cutout. And it said, send this in with this information and a check for whatever amount for a chance to get 2 tickets to the All-Star Game. So I don't know if you remember the line from Billy Crystal's movie City Slickers, when he's 40 and he looks back on his best day and he says, hey, my dad took me to Yankee Stadium, taught me how to keep score. We watched the Yankees beat the Red Sox. My favorite day of my life. I cut out that little thing, got a check from mom, sent it in, and lo and behold, we won 2 tickets to the All-Star Game. I took my dad, I brought a scorebook, and I taught my dad how to keep score.
What a great story. That's awesome.
So, I mean, I was into it. I don't know why or how. My older brother played basketball, but he wasn't into all the sports. My sister was not into sports. My dad didn't play sports. We didn't go to games. The first pro basketball game I ever attended was probably a Jazz game when I was a BYU athlete. Like, I never attended a pro basketball game as a kid. To this day, I've never attended a pro football game. Just because, I only bring that up because we didn't go. We didn't do those things as a family.
Coming up after the break, Mike talks about his amazing high school football career, but why he only chose to play basketball at BYU. This is the Deep Blue Podcast. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My guest today is former BYU basketball player and current Utah Jazz analyst, Mike Smith. So, I was going to ask you, was it always basketball? But you said you've played so many other sports, and you were a 6'10 quarterback, which doesn't happen very often. In fact, I believe you led your team to a perfect season and won the championship. So obviously you had skills in many different sports, volleyball being one of them. You were part of Team USA, the U-20 World Championships, got to represent the United States. You did so many things. So why basketball? Was it because of the height? Did you feel like because you're tall, you had to gravitate that direction, or what was it?
That's a really good question. I went to a football high school, a program that was either going to win the title or be in the hunt every year. We were not private. We didn't recruit. We just, on my particular year, amassed a lot of good athletes. It's kind of a funny story. When I got to high school, I was only going to play basketball. That was my thought. I had not yet played volleyball. I had played baseball, was always a pitcher and an all-star and all that. I played flag football, but never any football leagues. Just for the junior high, we had flag football against a lot of their local junior highs. Basketball I played, but there were no traveling teams back then. I wasn't playing club ball as we know it today. I just played for Newton Junior High School. And in the eighth grade, I was 6 feet tall, and I played point guard, of all things, just because I could handle the ball the best, pass the best, and we had a good team. I get to high school, and I'm going to what's called basketball summer camp. That was from 10 to 12 every day. Well, football was from 8 to 10. And the football coach sees me on the basketball, and he's like, hey, you got to come out for football. I was like, no thanks, you know. He goes, I know you played quarterback in junior high, blah, blah, blah. I go, yeah, I can throw the ball. But he goes, if I get Paul McDonald, who at the time, you might not know Paul McDonald because he didn't go on to a historic NFL career, but he was the starting quarterback for 2 years for University of Southern California, which was my favorite football team growing up, UCLA basketball, USC football. He says, if I get him to come down tomorrow to our practice, would you go play catch with him? I go, sure. I go, you don't know him. Well, it turns out he had coached him in high school. I didn't know that. And so this particular freshman football coach had been a varsity champion high school football coach in California. I didn't know his history, but not unlike Gene Hackman in the movie Hoosiers, he had a Skechered pass. He had punched a kid and had banned from high school football for a lot of years. Now he was making a comeback, and he was our freshman coach. So this was the first, second chance he got. It turned out he had coached this great high school quarterback. So the next day, here's Paul McDonald. He's the starting quarterback at Southern Cal. He's at our high school gym. He pulls me out of basketball and says, hey, you want to go play catch? I go, yeah. We went to the football field, and we threw the football for 30 minutes. And I don't remember what he said, except, man, you got a really good arm. You can throw the ball. He goes, his one comment was, why don't you give it a shot? Like, why don't you play football? And I said, I don't want to get hurt. And he goes, you're not going to get hurt. You're 6'4", playing freshman football. There's no chance you're going to get hurt. He goes, just give it a shot. You might like it. What do you got to lose? If you hate it, don't play again. Then concentrate on basketball. You got plenty of time. Long story short, I played. We went 14-0 that year. I played JV the next year. We went 14-0 or 13-0, how many ever games there were. The next year, I'm pulled up to the varsity. And get this, the quarterback from the previous year, So he's 1 year ahead of me. He's now going to be a senior and I'm going to be a junior. He was the CIF, which would be the equivalent of Utah State Player of the Year. And they had lost in the semis. So I went to the coach, said, yeah, I'm not going to play. He's going to be the starter. I'm not going to play. Well, sure enough, this kid gets hurt. And I get a chance to play like the first three games. And we win those three games. This is my junior year. Then he comes back from injury. The coach is in a conundrum. His name was Smith, too, by the way. There's a funny story about that. And he lets him start the rest of the season. And I play backup the rest of the season. And we win every game all the way to the semis and lose. So that's the only football game I lost in high school was the semifinals my junior year. Now I'm a senior. I said, what the heck? I'm going to play. I've put in 3 years. And we go 14-0, win the state title. And I break every record there was. So to answer your question, Jason, why didn't I pursue football? I never assumed it was any greatness coming from me. And that's the honest truth. I just thought it was the system and the players around me. And I basically did what the coaches told me. Mike, when you drop back, look at option one, look at option two, look at option three. If they're not up and throw it out of bounds, you know, take off and run. And I like followed that stuff to a T. And I dissected these defenses. They taught me how to read cover one and cover two. In high school, it was a piece of cake. And basically, Jason, as I walked up to the line, I knew who would be open every time. Now, on my right flanker, I had 6'4", who went D1 to Utah as a kicker. My tight end was 6'4", 230. He went D1 to USC, but he was the ninth pick in the baseball draft. And he played 16 years pro baseball. My left flanker was a guy named Darren Davis, who got a full ride to BYU as a flanker. He was 6'5 and led the state in receptions and touchdowns. So it's not like
stacked.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, Mike, you know, led this team to a title without any help. We were stacked. And the best part about what we did in high school was our offense, our coaches would go two places in the summer. They'd go to BYU and they'd go to San Francisco 49ers. And they would watch their summer practices and they'd come back and we ran all their plays. I, in high school, was running all their West Coast offense in 1982, the fall of 82, and no one could stop us. We threw the ball 45 times a game. No one had a chance. Even the final state game was like 38-14. It wasn't close. Doesn't even answer your question, right? I guess I just loved basketball. I loved how you could find a gym on your own. People would never mistake me for being a little bit introverted, but I am by nature. I'm a learned extrovert, but I think my most happy times in high school was headphones on in a gym and just by myself perfecting a craft. And so I think I loved the aloneness of basketball where you could work on stuff. And I mean, I was one of the top 12 players in the country for my age. So mm-hmm. I kind of felt that was my best path to make it to pro sports. I think as an old guy now, I look back, I wish I had gone for football because to be a 6'10 quarterback at BYU might have been pretty fun.
That could have been, well, especially since you knew the offense before you even got there.
Good point. Good point. I blame
it on. There was no ramping up. You were ready to hit the field.
I blame it on the great Steve Young, who is a dear friend. And my freshman year is his senior year. And the things I saw him do on the football field, I automatically said, well, I could never do that. And I automatically assumed I couldn't play college football.
Yeah.
But that's not true. I just couldn't do what Steve did.
Right. Not many people can do what Steve did. And so you just said it a minute ago. In terms of basketball, you were one of the best players to come out the year that you were being recruited and looking for the next phase of your basketball career in college. You said at the beginning of this interview that BYU was always where you wanted to go. When you have so much success, though, in high school, and I'm going to assume anybody and everybody, you said you had opportunities to go other places. Did you ever waver that BYU was where you were going to go?
Only when Frank Arnold was fired. So if you can imagine, my fall season, my senior year, is when basketball does their recruiting. Okay. That's in the middle of football season for me. So the basketball schools in the month of October, 30 of them are in my home 30 nights in a row. And I'm talking UCLA, USC, Duke, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Virginia. Every big school is in my home. I think we had 25 visits. So that's my night, every night during the month of October. Now I have four Friday nights in October where I have football games. And I was over it, right? I was over the recruiting process. So I narrowed it down to like three schools. And that was UCLA, USC, and BYU, because I thought if I did play both sports, those were the three schools I wanted to play at. So I had that pretty much narrowed down. And Frank Arnold was the basketball coach. Obviously, Lavelle Edwards was the football coach. This is Steve Young's junior year, my senior year in high school. They have a very successful year. Steve is breaking records. I love what they do football-wise. As you just mentioned, it's akin to how we played, so I was familiar with it. Basketball, BYU struggled that year. That's Devin Durant's junior year. That's Brian Taylor's freshman year. Chris Nikovich, freshman year. Scott Sinek, sophomore year, Brad Applegate, junior year. They're okay. I think they might win 21 games or so. I can't remember if they got NCAA tournament, but I think not. Maybe NIT that year. I don't know that they won the conference. I think not. But I loved Frank Arnold. Frank Arnold was a fantastic recruiter. He was a gentleman of every sort. He was handsome. He was smart. He had coached under John Wooden, and I'm like, I'm going there to play for him. And I don't know if you remember, or BYU fans remember, but in that year there was some turmoil. They called it a player revolt. It wasn't really a player revolt, as I've talked to some of the guys, but some of the players thought Frank was too tough on them because Frank was so darn honest. Frank, after the game, would say something like, so-and-so missed two really critical free throws. And, you know, I guess
they didn't want to be called out.
Yeah, and so those players or their parents got upset, and pretty soon this thing mounted when probably they didn't make postseason play, and sure enough, he was fired. So I should have told you this before, being over the whole recruiting process, when November 10th came along, that was the first year you could do what's called an early signing. I just spent a week, you know, immersed in prayer, and I felt like, I'm going to go to BYU. So I should have also told you this. And that's when I took a recruiting trip to BYU, Devin Durant was my host. And Devin picked me up one night. He says, Mike, I really don't know what to do. Like, but why don't we go up to this cabin? And there's three families up there. He goes, I live in the basement of one of these guys' houses, but they have a cabin and these three couples are going up there and they're just going to play games and eat food. Do you want to come along to that? And I was like, sure. And we went along. I went along with Devin. And we had the best time. And Devin shared experiences of his mission and what it was like to, you know, be in Spain as a missionary and come back and play. And I'd be lying, Jason, if I didn't say that night I had a spiritual experience. I had an epiphany. I had a warming of my soul that just, you know, said to me as clearly as could be, this is where you want to be. This is where you should play basketball. And we were with three couples who were in their 40s playing board games, and me and Devin. I'm 18. Devin's a returned missionary junior, getting ready for his senior year. He must have been 21 or 22. And so I knew then. But anyway, November 10th, I signed. And I was on the phone with both Frank Arnold and Lavelle Edwards at the same time. And I said, Lavelle, I'll see you in August. I'm coming to throw with the freshmen. And Frank, I'll see you, you know, when school begins and I'll be ready for the season. I said, you know, will you both let me play your sport for 1 year? I'm going to go on a mission. I'll come back. I'll probably choose one. And they both were on board completely. Of course, Lavelle loved it because my basketball scholarship didn't count against his scholarships. Frank immediately said, Mike, you need to apply for a Kimball scholarship because I was a 4.0 student. He was like,
yeah,
you need to get a Kimball scholar because that wouldn't count against his 12 basketball scholarships.
Right.
So they were making these moves behind the scenes. But anyway, somewhere in April there, BYU fires Frank Cardinal and Liddell Anderson gets the head job. I don't know Liddell. I don't know anything about him. I've never heard of him. He's never called me. And there I am now free, believe it or not, from my letter of intent that I've signed in November. Because if the coach you sign with is no longer the coach when you begin school, you're free to go wherever you want. So I didn't revisit other schools at that time, but that option did exist. And finally, Liddell called me, you know, once in June. He says, "Hey, I'm the new coach. You know, I heard good things about you. Can't wait to see you up here." I was like, "Great, great." It was like a 2-minute conversation. I was like, "Okay." I still don't know anything about him, that he was a coach at Utah State and he was an assistant for the Stars in the ABA, and that he'd been an athletic director for 10 years and kind of out of the game. Now it's like the end of July. Okay. So I'm getting ready to go up to Provo. My roommate is my wide receiver who got a full ride in football. And we're going up together to throw like a couple weeks before the school season begins, as the newcomers do, to like quarterbacks throw with the receiver, start to go through the plays and, you know, early fall football. And now I get a phone call from Liddell and he says, "Hey," he goes, "I just heard you're going to be up here next week." I go, "I am. I go, it'll be great to meet you." Remember, I'm barely 18. I don't have, you know, parents who played sports and they're counseling me. And he goes, "Just one thing." He goes, "If you're planning on going out for football," he goes, "don't bother coming out for basketball." I was like, "What?" I was like, "Liddell," I said, "I'm one of the 12 best basketball players in the country. If I go out for football, you don't want me to go out for basketball?" And he's like, "Yeah." He says, "You'll be late. You'll be behind the scenes. You'll be out of shape. Football shape's different than basketball shape. You know, don't even worry about it." And again, Jason, 18-year-old kid, I was like, okay. And I never went up for football.
And that was the end of the football career right there.
That was it. Only confirmed a month later when I watched Steve Young scamper around, you know, Cougar Stadium. And I was like, okay, I couldn't do that. Maybe I made the right choice. But that was it. So I was basketball only at that point. And anyway, that's probably too much information, a long story, but that is all of the background. I kind of now looking back, wish I had played football, because I'm still a slender body type. I'm still 6'10", 225. That's what I played at. And everyone will say to me, "Oh yeah, you would have got crushed." I go, "No, if I'd played football, I'd have been 6'10", 250.
Yeah.
Because I would have been eating and lifting and training a different way. I wouldn't have needed so much agility and length and speed. I would have needed, you know, strength to hold my ground and turn and throw in the pocket.
Our interview with Mike Smith was so great, we just couldn't fit everything into just one episode. In part two, we talked to Mike about his days playing at the Marriott Center, not having the professional career he was hoping for, and how he transitioned from the hardwood to the broadcast booth. My name is Jason Shepard. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.